Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. On this week's show, we're going to culinary school. First, Dr. Tim Harlan and teaching chef Leah Saris reveal all the details about Tulane Med School's exciting new refresh project. Then, Chef David Tyner and student Ben Mitchell tell what happens when the cameras come into the Louisiana Culinary Institute's classroom on the Cooking Channel's new reality TV show, The Freshman Class. Put on your aprons and sharpen your knives. It's time for cooking class on this week's Louisiana Eats. Louisiana Eats listeners are well acquainted with Dr. Tim Harlan. He's medical director at Tulane University's School of Medicine, and he's been working on a very special cooking school project. And finally, he's ready for the big reveal. Joining Tim are program director Chef Leah Saris, recent Tulane med school graduate Gary Cow, and third-year med student Andrew Burkhead. So welcome to Louisiana Eats, y'all.
It is great to be here, Poppy.
Tim, I'd like to start with an overview of how this came to be.
Well, about 3 years ago, my dean, Ben Sachs, came to me and said he wanted to build a teaching kitchen to teach medical students how to cook. And for me, you can imagine that's pretty exciting, being a chef and a physician and having written cookbooks and done television, et cetera. But how do you really make that work for everybody? And after brainstorming for a while, we decided that the real solution was to actually create the teaching kitchen and put it out in the community, where we could then also teach the community how to cook. And we could use the physicians and the medical students kind of as a force multiplier to see if we could change the way people think about food so we get people back into their kitchens. And originally, we were going to put this at the Fertel Clinic at the old Roots Chris Steakhouse, where we have a community clinic now. And then about 2 years ago, Jeff Schwartz and the Broad Community Connections came to us and said that they wanted to have us have the teaching kitchen at the Refresh site. And for the last 18 months, we have all been fighting very hard. Jeff Schwartz, the team at Broad Community Connections, the folks at Whole Foods, the developers, L&M, who have been terrific, as well as the folks at Liberty's Kitchen, to create a really unique site. So beyond just us creating the Gold Ring Center for Culinary Medicine, I think all of us have created something really unique in the world.
And it's gargantuan compared to what you had originally envisioned.
It is for us. You know, we had thought originally we would maybe have about a 3,000 square foot teaching kitchen. We'll have a 4,500 square foot teaching kitchen. We'll be able to teach 16 to 20 people hands-on cooking skills. Chef Leah and I, over the last year, with a team of medical students, community members, other physicians, other chefs, have developed programming for our medical students, both the first and second year medical students. Andrew's been amazing and very much involved in our outreach to the community. So for us, this has turned into a really different project. And people nationally are recognizing that maybe this is a solution, or at least part of a solution, for the problems that we have with lifestyle-related diseases, obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, et cetera.
Another question that I have for people who might not know about the Refresh Project, perhaps you should sort of dissect that piece out for us.
So this will be, again, the brainchild of Jeff Schwartz and a group of really fantastic community members led by Lisa Amos. The Broad Community Connections decided that food hubs could be the center of revitalization for different communities and neighborhoods. And they focused on the old Schwegman site. What had been the Robert Fresh Market has been vacant since the storm on North Broad. and 60,000 square foot, beautiful concrete box grocery store built in the 1960s. Whole Foods will take 30,000 square feet of that grocery store on the right side as you're facing. We will take 4,500 square feet for our teaching kitchen. And then Liberty's Kitchen, which is an amazing social entrepreneurial organization that teaches at-risk youth culinary skills. They're also going to do production for charter schools and Whole Foods. They'll take about 10,000 square feet. So it really is kind of no one's done this before. So certainly no one's done a teaching kitchen in a medical school. Chef Leah is the first chef to be hired by a medical school for the faculty, we think, anywhere in the world. So these are all really groundbreaking concepts.
And it is kind of groundbreaking also to consider the way you have woven in academia, corporate, and nonprofits all together. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, these are the solutions for all of us going forward.
So, Chef Leah, you must have one of the most innovative and exciting jobs that any cooking instructor could ever dream of. And you're pretty much the only one who's doing something like this in conjunction with a medical school. How did you come to be involved?
It's all really very, very exciting, and I'm extremely fortunate to be doing what I'm doing. It was a little luck, a little experience that ended me here. I started out in Providence, Rhode Island, where I went to school with Johnson & Wales and had a variety of experience in both community outreach, farming, and teaching. I was actually teaching at Johnson & Wales when the relationship between Tulane Medical School and Johnson & Wales got started. I had been speaking with my boss there, and just so happened that Dr. Harlan and Dean Sachs were coming to Rhode Island that day. She actually brought them to my classroom after she had told me about the job about 20 minutes earlier and given me the job description, and they quickly were asking me questions. They invited me to dinner that night when my colleagues graciously covered the last part of my class so that I could go. I went to dinner with them. We started talking, and the rest is history.
But describe for me the scope of your work with the med school.
Sure. It's wide and varied. I work very closely with Dr. Harlan to help develop curriculum for both the community, the med students, and manage those aspects. I teach the classes as well. I also manage interns that come from Johnson & Wales to the medical school and medical students that go to Johnson & Wales and do an internship there. I build community relationships. I manage the kitchen and work closely with Dr. Harlan on budgeting, et cetera. So.
Do you ever sleep?
Yes, I do get to sleep.
Well, I know that a very big piece of this project has had to do with the community involvement. And Andrew, you've been very instrumental in that. So would you talk to us about how this works within the community?
Sure. It's been great working with Leah and Dr. Harlan to get this started. I guess we first really heard about this teaching kitchen at the end of my first year, which I guess is now 2 years ago. And Chef Leah gave us a demonstration on cooking and said, anybody who's interested, come meet us. And we met. And from there, things just started moving very fast. Without any sort of structure or leadership, the students really got together under Chef Leah, who took us under her wings. And we started putting together these classes. So Esther Jew, the president of the class, worked with Leah in putting together curricula of how we'd like to be able to teach the community members.
So who were these community members? Who did you reach out to?
So Chef Leah and Dr. Harlan as well helped reach out. We initially started working with the Fertel Clinic, and they would come, I think it was every Monday, and we'd have, we put together these plug-in just hot plates, and we'd put together a cooking class there. So people who are interested in improving their health, they're learning more about how to be able to cook. People who really didn't know any more than just didn't even know how to cook vegetables or peel a carrot. They're used to going to McDonald's. And these are people who really were interested in learning how to be able to control the food that they ate and know that it relates to their health.
So you witnessed some true culinary revelations going on, huh?
Yeah, and we had, it was very surprising because these medical students that are going in to teach them are also learning as much as the community members.
Yeah.
So that first day when the medical students may not know the most to start, and these community members may not know the most to start either, and they get together and learn together. It really is reinforcing from the med student's perspective how the nutrition works and how they can turn it into a practical skill. And for these, I still accidentally call them patients sometimes. They're not patients. They're community members. Seeing them and listening to the medical students digest this information turned it into a skill that really does have an effect on their health.
When we come back, we'll learn more about what's cooking with the Refresh Project at Tulane Med School. Stay tuned. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen and Zatarain's. We've been talking with Dr. Tim Harlan, Chef Leah Saras, and med students Gary Cow and Andrew Burkhead about their recent experiences with the new culinary program that's now part of the training at Tulane Med School. Gary was part of the first group of students who had on-site training at the Johnson & Wales College of Culinary Arts.
I had a great time there. Before going, no one really knew what to expect. I had found out about the program through a former classmate of mine who was heavily involved, I understand, with setting up that rotation. She actually was one of the first cohort of students. There were four students that went back in January. We were all kind of guinea pigs. You know, we don't really know what to expect. They didn't know what to expect from us, how to integrate us into the curriculum. But everyone had a really good experience. They treated us superbly, honestly. And we're very fortunate to have that experience. And I actually kind of enjoyed being part of the sort of beginning. I like being a guinea pig in the sense that there was a lot of freedom of flexibility in the curriculum. They sort of were very open to our input and our feedback, even basic things like knife skills. You know, we just don't have any sort of culinary experience. So we were just learning the very basics and also understanding it was much more like to our level since we didn't know any better anyway. So they kind of include us into different tables, and every table produced a different dish, for example, when they were doing production weeks. And that was really valuable. We did that for the first week.
Well, you know, knives and fire, two of the basic dangers in
sure
any
thing.
Kitchen. Do you have to patch anybody up?
Fortunately, no. I actually talked about this at some point when we were being interviewed there as well. There's a sort of similarity between ORs and like a kitchen. Things are really fast paced. There's a lot of things going on. Everyone's kind of stressed because there's like a time limit and there's a lot of things to do. And there's like dangerous objects flying around, you know. In OR, you're worried about, you know, sterility and you have like sharp instruments and everything. In the kitchen, like you mentioned, there are knives and there are fires and you can get burns and people can get cut. Fortunately, when I was there, I didn't see any of it. I think we would be a little bit nervous being almost new graduates having to take care of anyone. But it was really a good experience in seeing sort of how they work. We saw safety was always first. You always announce yourself before you carry everything behind someone, you know, behind or hot behind.
Hot pot.
Exactly. And you get used to it and you get thrown into a situation. And part of our training is the ability to adapt and learn quickly.
That's fantastic. I love that analogy of the ER and the restaurant kitchen. I've never heard anybody make that correlation before, and boy, do I get it. So, Andrew and Gary, how much cooking had you all done previously before becoming involved in this project?
I'd always enjoyed cooking. I've never been good at it before, but I always enjoyed it. I don't mind getting things wrong when I cook. But since I've done this teaching kitchen, my cooking has certainly improved. My technique is improved. The health of it. I'm more conscientious of what I'm putting into it or what I'm buying from the supermarket or just making sure that I'm buying fresh ingredients rather than, you know, some of the patients that we see on the rounds, for example, and we say, do you cook at home? Like, yeah, of course I cook at home. Like, what do you make? They're like, I make that box of macaroni and cheese that You know, like, you're cooking at home, but it's not really cooking. And
it's a shame people don't really get that correlation very well these days.
I mean,
you can shop at the grocery store for a whole week's groceries and leave and never really have to take a pot out.
It's still fast food.
Tell me, Tim, are other medical schools in the country starting to sit up and take notice of what's going on down here?
They have. Actually, we've been pretty excited about that piece of it. Because we're the first to do this, and we've worked so diligently in the last year to create kind of a unique curriculum for the medical students, we have a curriculum that we want to share with other medical students. We are in discussions with the University of Alabama over at Tuscaloosa. We're in discussions with the medical school in Charleston. The folks from UT Southwestern have come down to visit us and spend a day with us in the teaching kitchen here. We've spoken with folks at NYU. I see us getting a lot of interest in this over the course of the next few years. You know, the way forward for us as physicians, we know from the research and the literature that when physicians know how to walk the walk themselves, and they know how to cook, and they know about nutrition, they know about lifestyle, and they share that with their patients, and they talk the talk about their experiences. You know, I heard Andrew talking a minute ago about suggesting how people might make their own macaroni and cheese instead of using the box macaroni and cheese. And just those discussions with patients have a profound impact. There's tons of research about that. So our goal, you know, we're not trying to create dietitians necessarily. It's just about trying to change that dialogue with the patients. So there's a lot of interest in our goal. We think that starting next January, we'll be able to roll this out, certainly at University of Alabama and at the medical school in Charleston. And the more we do this, you know, we're very interested in the research piece of this and proving that this is efficacious. I'm an internist. I believe in evidence-based medicine. I believe in evidence-based nutrition. And it's really important for us to make sure that we're proving that this works. And the areas that it doesn't work, to make sure that we're changing those so they are. So all of that package together, other medical schools are really interested in, and we're interested in them being involved, because the more we can do this in large groups, as with any good research project, the more we can make sure that we're proving that it works and works well.
So it appears that your timeline on this is that you were looking for the facility to be built out and complete in January 2014.
That is our goal. And I think we'll probably come close to this. If you drive by the Schwegman site now, I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. If you drive by the Refresh site now on North Broad, you'll see things are working their full tilt. I think the timeline is that the Whole Foods will open probably in late November or early December, and Liberty's Kitchen will probably follow close on that. They will, both of those will likely be open before we are. The nice thing is, because we've done all of this community outreach in the last year, developed this community program, because we've done the med student programming, both for the first and second year med students, the fourth year med students, hosting the culinary interns from Johnson and Wales, we'll be able to hit the ground running. We will also continue to do this outreach. So we won't be at Fertel because we're just two blocks away, but we'll continue to do our outreach and our programming at Keller Library, where we've put on three or four or five programs. We've done programs. We've got a pediatric curriculum as well for the kids. And then Ashe Cultural Center over on
Aretha Castle.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Amazing place. Amazing place.
Yes.
And really a very successful program there. So we'll continue to work on that outreach in addition to teaching on site at the Refresh site.
What are you all the most excited about personally? What really turns you on?
As the community service person, I had to talk to all the medical students about the opportunity to work in the kitchen. And Dr. Harlan may second this, but when maybe two-thirds of the incoming class, they're now second-year medical students, lunged at the opportunity to cook and to teach, I don't think it was just the idea of free food, but
It might have had
something to do with it.
It helps, But medical students will do anything for free food.
We're a hungry people. But the opportunity to learn themselves how to cook and improve their own life and skills it really floored me, the excitement.
That's great. And how about you?
Someone asked me a similar question the other day. What was the single most exciting aspect of what we're doing? And it's really the whole package that excites me, because it really integrates community and the medical field. And we're teaching them both nutrition on a level that they can communicate better. And we're making an impact in our local community while collaborating with these great local organizations who have similar but not the same goals. And instead of going off in a lot of different directions, we're coming together to hopefully make a much larger impact and then measure the efficacy of what we are doing. So,
well, you know, as a native New Orleanian, mm-hmm. as someone who has spent much of her life here, I am really tired of seeing us always at the bottom of every list. And this work seems to me that it's going to be the thing that's going to push us right to the top of the class when it comes to improving lifestyle through health and nutrition. So thank you all so much for your time today, for working so hard to see this project come together. And when it's all done, can we come visit you there?
Oh, I think we should do the show there once every few months.
I'm ready.
That'd be fantastic. You come and we can do a topical show. We'd love to do that, Poppy.
We're on. We'll see you there.
Thank you.
Dr. Tim Harlan, Gary Cow, Andrew Burkhead, and Chef Leah Saris of the Goldring Center for Culinary Medicine at Tulane University. Not caring for patients, you can often find Dr. Gourmet in the kitchen dreaming up delicious new ways to apply his Mediterranean diet philosophy. Here's Tim's twist on everyone's favorite, fettuccine Alfredo. First, Tim makes a blonde roux using olive oil instead of butter. He whisks in 2% milk and a little goat cheese or light cream cheese, along with grated Parmigiano Reggiano and garlic. Healthier whole wheat fettuccine noodles are substituted for white. When you add 1.5 cups of steamed broccoli and 1/4 pound of peeled shrimp to the suggested 4 ounces of pasta per person, you've got quite a satisfying meal with only 539 calories. Learn more about Dr. Gourmet by visiting our Louisiana Eats website, where you'll also find the complete recipe for Tim's Fettuccine Alfredo. I'm Poppy Tooker, and this is Louisiana Eats. Our Louisiana Eats roving reporter, Frank McManus, is always hunting out authentic Louisiana Eats experiences for us on the road. So, Frank, where are we going today?
We're going to go down to Lake Maurepas, the slightly more freshwater neighbor to the north of Lake Pontchartrain, and to Kevin's Cajun Seafood, which is located on Homeport Drive in Maurepas. In addition to doing this sort of standard fare of Louisiana fried seafood type items, they've also, you know, taken up some pretty creative interpretations of things. There's a great crawfish beignet appetizer. The fried foods that they do have are very lightly done and almost a batter that resembles a tempura rather than a heavier batter. Attention to the way that the fried foods are cooked, as well as some of the sauces that they come up with, sort of set it apart. You automatically know you're going to like it because there's a boat dock.
Do they have boiled seafood as well?
They do. They've got boiled seafood. I mean, they really have a very extensive menu that includes a lot of the things that you're familiar with seeing, you know, crawfish stuff, mushroom caps, fried crawfish tail, spinach and artichoke dip, that kind of a thing. They've got this great crab cake that they call the crab cake achafalaya, where they use Blue Point crab, and they top it with what they call their achafalaya crawfish cream sauce, which I couldn't get the recipe for, but really is a standout little signature item. And they also do several meat items, steaks, that sort of thing, for people who might not be as seafood inclined. But, you know, if you live in South Louisiana and you're going to go to a place like that and you're not seafood inclined, then all I really have for you is pity.
Well, it all sounds delicious, and I'm ready to jump in the boat and head on over, so I'll meet you there.
I think you could get there pretty quick coming from New Orleans across Pontchartrain. You probably beat me there.
Well, we'll see. Thank you so much, Frank, and please come back and talk to us again soon.
Absolutely, Poppy. Thank you.
Louisiana Eats roving reporter Frank McMahon. McGee is every chef's best friend. His 1984 classic on food and cooking demystifies food chemistry in a clear, factual way while serving up a delicious dose of food history as well. Since 2006, Harold has been a regular contributor to the New York Times with his column, The Curious Cook. Harold, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Thank you, Poppy. It's great to be here.
Since you're here in Louisiana, could we start by talking about the roux? Now, chemically speaking, what is the difference between a dark Louisiana roux and a classical French one?
Well, the dark one has basically been cooked more, and that does three different things. One is it changes the color. So instead of being kind of cream-colored, it's, whatever shade you want to make it, from light brown to chocolate brown to almost black. It also changes the flavor, because what's happening during that browning process is that sugars are reacting with proteins and generating lots and lots of aromatic molecules. And so the further you carry that cooking, the more aromatic the roux gets. On the other side is the fact that because you're generating all these delicious things from the starch materials, the starch is becoming a less effective thickener. So the darker you cook a roux, the more of it you need in order to get a particular consistency in the soup or the sauce.
Traditionally, people down here slow cook a roux. But I have found in my cooking that if I preheat the oil and add the flour and cook it pretty quickly, it saves a little time and it all comes out to the same milk chocolate brown color. Do you think there is a difference between a slow-cooked roux and a fast one chemically?
I'm sure there are chemical differences because reactions depend largely on time and temperature. And if you cook for a longer time at a lower temperature, you tend to get one set of reaction products. If you cook at a high temperature for a short period of time, you get a different set. But there's overlap. And my feeling is that probably if you do it both ways, and to you they taste basically the same and behave basically the same, then whatever differences there are inconsequential.
I know that salt and acid correct each other. How does that work?
It's a matter of balance. So we have just a handful of basic taste sensations, sweetness, sourness, bitterness, saltiness, and umami, which is the savory flavor of meats and fish and things like that. And it turns out that for a dish to taste at its best, all those elements have to be there in some sort of balance. And so if you have a preponderance of one or the other of any of them, adding the others will tend to bring that flavor down and raise the other ones up and then give you this kind of balanced foundation for whatever the aromas are. So that's what's going on, is that a little acid in a salty dish or a little salt in an acidic dish help even out that foundation.
Do you believe that salt is the most important flavoring ingredient?
It would have to be right up there. I mean, I'd hate to lose any of them. But if you lost salt, then you'd be losing not just saltiness, but a general effect that salt has on many aromas as well. It turns out that for a variety of reasons, if you add a pinch of salt to even a sweet dish, that can end up amplifying the aromas in that dish and just make it seem more flavorful. And other taste components don't do that in the same way. So that's an especially valuable property that salt has.
So the way that it amplifies the aromas, is that amplified in the mouth, or is it actually something that you could detect with your olfactory nerves?
It's something that's happening both chemically and in our brains, which is where perception happens. So it turns out that when you add salt to any dish with aroma molecules in it, it turns out that salt makes that dish less chemically hospitable to aroma, which means that the food will release the aroma more easily, which means that there's more of it for us to smell, more of it for us to enjoy. So that's one thing, is the flavor release. And then it also turns out that our brains tend to pay more attention to certain aromas when there are other things going on the taste buds. So if you just smell something, that's one experience the brain is having. But if you smell that same thing at the same time that you're tasting something, then what your brain says, I mean, this is my guess, is you're not just smelling something, you're actually eating something that has nutritional value, and therefore I'm going to have you pay more attention to that flavor. But it does turn out, just objectively speaking, if you give people a flavor with salt and without salt, when it comes with salt, the perception of the aroma, not the saltiness, but the aroma, goes higher.
Do you have a particular favorite kind of salt?
Well, not really. Not something about which there's a lot of, I would say, marketing these days. Salt is salt. Salt is sodium chloride. And the effects that I've been talking about are produced by sodium chloride. So the purest, most industrial version of salt is going to be just as good a job at that as the most expensive fleur de sel from France.
Thank you so much for talking with us on Louisiana Eats.
Oh, my pleasure, Poppy, anytime.
Food scientist and curious cook, Harold McGee.
Come back, chef instructor David Tyner and student Ben Mitchell reveal what goes on when reality TV cameras from the Cooking Channel's new show, The Freshman Class, invade the classroom. You don't want to miss this. Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Rouse's Markets. Louisiana Eats culinary heritage heroes are farmers, fishers, chefs, and food producers who bring an authentic taste of our state's heritage to the world's tables. When this week's hero returned to Louisiana after an extended trip in Southeast Asia, she had a newfound interest in Louisiana's Vietnamese population.
When I went to Vietnam, I stayed in what's called guest houses. It's a little hotel almost, but it's owned by a family. And so you meet the family. Sometimes they'll have dinner with you. And so I was able to see what Vietnamese life is like firsthand. And coming back here, meeting with members of the Vietnamese community, I had dinner with a couple of families and saw that those mealtime traditions and family traditions have remained very much intact. At mealtimes, you'll have the whole family sitting around the table, sharing dishes, talking about the day, praying before meals. There's similarities. I think the contrasts lie in the type of food and the way it's served, that sort of thing.
She shopped in the Vietnamese markets, ate in their restaurants, and marveled at the enduring strength of their traditions. Our hero was so inspired by her trip and experiences at home afterwards that she created a documentary about the life of Louisiana's Vietnamese community. Without any previous experience in documentary filmmaking, she forged ahead with little more than a camera and a notebook, exploring the assimilation and isolation of the Vietnamese cultural experience.
The food's becoming more accessible. They have new restaurants in Uptown. They have, Dosan's in Mid-City, which has been there for a while. It's more available. People are seeing more of it. You don't have to go to the West Bank or New Orleans East. But I think another factor is that it's so healthy. Most of the dishes, for the most part, there's certainly things on the menu that aren't as healthy as others, but a bowl of pho or spring rolls, it's fresh. There's very little oil. There's not a whole lot of emphasis on sauces and things like that. And so you can eat a big meal and still eat healthily and not feel like you ever did it.
That's why Suzanne Pfefferly is this week's Louisiana Eats Culinary Heritage Hero, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen. Thank you, Suzanne, for showing us just how Vietnamese food makes for great Louisiana Eats. Rouge-based Louisiana Culinary Institute recently provided the backdrop for a new cooking channel series, The Freshman Class. This small culinary institute offers associate degrees in culinary arts that are no joking matter. Each course has a pass or fail exam. If you miss one day of classes there, you get a warning. Two, and you're on probation. Three strikes, and you're out. All that pressure and reality TV cameras, too. Joining us to talk about the experience of the freshman class are Chef David Tyner and student Ben Mitchell. Gentlemen, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So, Chef Tyner, how did you become a chef, and why are you involved at LCI?
Well, like everyone else, this was a passion of mine, so I took a chance, pursued it, worked in restaurants for many years, had the opportunity to teach at the school, to which my wife told me I was going to take it. So I started
hours
teaching.
Hours are better, huh?
hours are better. You're home on the weekends. So I've been teaching at the school for a little over 6 years now, been the director for about 4 years now. I love it. It's
well,
fun.
I think it's fascinating that, Ben, before you decided to become a chef, your primary career was as a taxidermist. So how did all that work out for you?
Well, without a doubt, we eat 5 deer a year at my house, so we eat a lot of wild game.
Uh-huh.
I was fortunate enough to purchase a piece of land in downtown Crowley several years ago. My wife and I had discussed, what we were going to do with it. We had different options, but that restaurant just kept coming back over and over and over again because I love to cook. I've been cooking since I was a kid, and we need something downtown. So that's where we are now, and I knew I needed to get some education. I didn't know anything about the restaurant business, but I knew LCI could get me there, and that's why we're there now.
That's such an interesting decision because the rules there are so rigid, like that 8 a.m. class starts and three strikes, you're out. You commute every day to Baton Rouge from Crowley?
3-hour drive, round trip, not counting traffic or anything, any hiccups.
Oh, and traffic's really fun in Baton Rouge.
Absolutely. But, I'm driven. I'm dedicated to be successful for my kids. Really, that's what drives me. It's a family.
Well, did you know when you signed up for school that there was going to be a reality TV show involved with this?
I had not a clue that I was going to get picked to do a TV show when I went to school.
So how did this all come about?
Well, we were approached by a production company, and they were looking to do a reality show to follow several students going through culinary school. And out of several schools, we were selected based off of not only our location being in Louisiana, but also the students that were going through the interview process.
Well, we're in Louisiana, so you're bound to have a bunch of characters, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And plus, where do you find better food than in Louisiana?
Absolutely.
The best in the world.
Absolutely. So, David, tell us a little bit about the other students we're going to be seeing on the show.
Well, the other three students that you'll see is Jared Heine. He is just getting out of the military in the Marines. So he has the challenges of all that he went through in the military and then the transition into civilian life.
Yeah, because he had some some war injuries that yes. have affected his abilities.
Yes, he has some injuries from the war that are a challenge for him, but I don't think it's not going to slow him down.
They weren't
sure.
a challenge for you.
Yeah, no, not at all. And then the other one is going to be Jasmine Simmons, who is a young mother who is trying to make a future for, you know, not only herself but her daughter.
And she was doing the commute from New Orleans because
yes.
by night she's an exotic dancer.
Yes.
Is that a frequent sort of student to have?
No. I mean, we get students from all walks
all
of
sorts.
Life.
Yeah. Okay, so this wasn't the first stripper.
Well, I don't know about that, but I wasn't even going to say that. But we do have people from all walks of life that it makes it interesting. You go in any restaurant, you have people from all walks of life in the restaurant.
And then there's a mother-daughter team.
There is a mother-daughter team. The daughter wanted to go to culinary school, and she wanted the mother to go with her. That was the challenge for them.
Did either of you have any reservations about this before the filming started?
Well, I was kind of concerned. You're in a class and you're teaching. I was concerned with the distraction part of it. You know, how do you teach with cameras walking around? And I'm thinking one person in the room, but it wasn't. It was three or four at a time.
Yeah, how many cameras at a time?
Usually it's one camera with three or four people walking around, and the camera is following you.
Uh-huh.
But after a couple of weeks, you actually do get used to it to an extent.
Did all the students get used to it?
Most of them did. The other students, I guess, were trying to get used to it, although they were still kind of fascinated at the cameras walking around. And they said, it will be like a fly on the wall. Well, it was a pretty big fly on the wall.
Yeah, uh-huh. A fly on the wall in the kitchen usually gets swatted.
Exactly. That follows you around.
Yeah.
So, but it was interesting.
And I noticed when I saw the first episode that there were some faces that were sort of blurred out. So
yeah.
not everybody agreed no. to participate.
Correct. Everyone had to sign a waiver to be filmed. And those who chose not to be filmed, not a problem, then they just blurred their face out.
Hmm. Did anybody change their mind about being in the class?
No. We had no one that really changed their mind. We did have some that changed their mind about wanting to be filmed or not to be filmed. But no one said, you know, no, I don't want any part of this, because they were all told that there is a show going to be filmed here,
mm-hmm.
that if you are going to be in the room, you're going to be filmed. That's when they were given the choice to have their face shown or not.
Well, you know, let's face it. I'm sure you spend a great deal of time at the Culinary Institute trying to dispel this concept amongst students. But unfortunately, I find that in the culinary world of today, a lot of people have this idea that they're going to go and get a culinary degree, and then they're going to be the next Food Network star.
Oh, we get that all the time.
So I would think, in fact, that maybe the cameras were an enticement.
It was to some. But then it wasn't as glamorous as a lot of people thought it was going to be. You know, a TV show. All that
None
you see
is
the finished program, and you think, wow, that must have been fun. Well, it's a lot of work that
it's
goes
a pain
into
in the
it.
Neck.
Exactly.
Well, this particular class, because how does it work? Each class is comprised of how many students that all start together?
No more than 30.
Okay. So I imagine each class differs a little in skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the range in this class to you?
Well, this class was no different than any others. You have students that are experienced, have been working in the industry for years. You have students that have never set foot in a kitchen. So with this starting class, the four that were being filmed, they all had one thing in common, is that most of them had no experience at all, little or no experience.
Okay.
So that helped them out. It's great because they're all learning at the same pace. And even on the show, you can see where they're making mistakes, and we're telling them about their mistakes, and we're also telling them about their successes. So that makes it a great learning environment.
And Ben, you were one of the students who had no previous kitchen experience.
Yep, I've never been in a commercial kitchen. That was
well,
the first
but you're,
time.
You're a Louisiana man.
But I could cook now.
So, yeah.
Set the record straight. I could cook a little bit.
Yeah, I bet you'd been stirring some things up at home before.
Absolutely.
Well, what was your impression of the other people in your class? Was there a sense of camaraderie, or was it competitive?
I don't think we were too competitive. I think that, you know, we were all pretty much in the same boat. So I think we helped each other out a lot to get through it. especially being in a commercial kitchen. You know, I think that was definitely an eye-opener for all of us, you know,
yeah.
Even the ones that were or had previous experience in there. But we stick together, you know.
There's a little bit of competitiveness going on.
Maybe a little.
There has to be. Who's going to make the best hollandaise? Who's going to have the closest knife cuts?
Yeah.
But that makes it fun.
That's right.
That definitely makes it fun.
During the filming of the show, Ben, you had an added complication, a blessed added complication,
absolutely.
I imagine. But you had a third child who was actually born during the filming of this show. So
that's right.
How'd all that work out for you? I mean, the pressure of a newborn baby, you're doing a reality TV show, and you're trying to learn how to be a chef. Now, that's kind of crazy stuff.
The pressure was on. I mean, it's still on. There's no doubt about that. I think for the wife and I, it was more of a time management, you know, with the new baby and adjusting financially to a young child. And it's just tough. Let me tell you, it's just been tough, you know.
Yeah, with the newborn baby. And I'm curious about this, how this whole thing worked in your life. Was it the same people who were at school who were also filming you at home in Crowley? Were they shadowing you home? How did the pieces of that production work go?
They did. It was pretty much the same people for the most part all the time. And I'll be honest with you, it was really, really tough for a while. And now, you know, they're like family, you know. I mean, it's, you know, you make that adjustment, you adapt. And I got to be honest with you, if it wouldn't be for my wife, I wouldn't be here right now. You know, she's a strong woman, so we got through it, you know. We got through some of the tough stuff.
What did she say about it when she learned the TV crew was coming to her house?
I mean, we were both excited, but didn't really know what to expect, you know, because, I mean, you're pretty much inviting strangers into your home to film your life, you know, and I was skeptical about it at first. But, I mean, like I say, after the first couple of weeks or so, you could tell they were genuine, they were good people, you know, they were great. They actually made it easy for us, you know, to go
really
through
good.
It.
That makes it a lot easier.
Yep.
So when's graduation?
April.
Yeah, it'll be April of next year.
Oh, wow. So you really do still have a while to go.
10 months.
Yeah, the show actually filmed their first semester.
Okay.
From beginning to end.
Yeah.
And which is amazing because it's 16 weeks and they've got it compressed into 8 30-minute segments.
Yeah, well, they can do a lot of very tricky things in the editing room.
Oh, yeah. It's the magic of TV.
So what happens next? You're going to start building the restaurant? You got a name? What's your plan, Ben?
Next, when I get out of school, I think what I'm going to do, in all honesty, is get a catering trailer first and start out small and then build
a
business.
Like a little food truck business.
Absolutely, and let the business build itself. And that's what the plan is. And then I'm thinking, you know, in maybe 2 or 3, 4 years, you know, maybe build a nice restaurant so everybody can enjoy.
Do they have food trucks already in Crowley?
No, they don't.
Well, you can be the trendsetter. There you go.
Yep.
Well, I just want to thank you guys so much for making the trip to the studio to visit with us. And congratulations on being part of this fun project. And
thank you.
Thank you so much for coming to talk with us.
Thank you.
Louisiana Culinary Institute's Chef David Tyner and Ben Mitchell of the Cooking Channel's new show, The Freshman Class. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, Christian LeBlanc of The Young and Restless discusses this year's No AIDS Task Force Dine Out for Life.
When you say I'm going to New Orleans, it's not like I have to twist anybody's arms. And I've had people from Days of Our Life, from all different shows that have come down with me. And to do, I mean, God bless, they will come up and go into the swamps with me to raise money. New Orleans kind of soaks up a lot of the charity work here. It's such a, you know, and well-deserved and well-needed. But there's so much need out in the parishes, the rural parishes in particular, that those are my people. You know, I'm a LeBlanc. All those LeBlancs that owe you money, those are my people.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at wwno.org. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Rouse's Markets, and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan and Company, Lights Egan, and Westside Lights Egan Funeral Homes, LCI Workers' Comp, and our media sponsor, Louisiana Kitchen and Culture Magazine.
Theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, produced at Piety Street Recording. Thanks to producer and sound engineer Thomas Walsh. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO.